You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for industry news, data, and prices. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Consiglione. Well, there was certainly less whiplash from U.S. President Donald Trump this week regarding tariffs, but that doesn't mean that that was an uneventful week.
No, of course not. The big story this week is that U.S. shrimp importers are raising their prices across the entirety of the category, protecting their current inventory and advancing imports ahead of a critical deadline.
So while Trump did pause his higher country-specific tariffs on products from more than 50 nations for 90 days, there's still a lot of moving parts leading up to that new deadline, which is, drumroll please,
July 9th, save that date. So now, like everything else revolving around these tariffs, there's widespread confusion. So is July 9th an arrival or a shipping deadline? We're calling on some friends for answers.
Joining us this week is Editor-in-Chief Tom Seaman, Senior Price Reporter Gary Morrison, and Deputy EU Editor Dan Gibson.
Welcome, everyone. So who's drawing the short straw to explain what the HE double fish sticks is going on with that July 9th date? Tom, how about you?
Well, I'll give it a go because it's caused a lot of confusion in the sector this week. The story kind of came about where we started to dig into the raw material price increases, and then a source just mentioned to me that people were just not sure about whether this date was relating to when products need to arrive or when they need to ship. And we ended up speaking to multiple different sources on it, 50-50 on people thinking it's the arrival date, other people thinking, no, I've got until July the 8th to ship, the product can be on the water then. Even some major US shrimp importers had been advised that this was fine and it was products on the water. I think maybe stemming from the 90-day extension and them thinking that the May 27th date of arrival previously was then going to be extended out for 3 months. But when you look at the executive order, it's reasonably clear, although it's still caused confusion, the July the 9th figure is an arrival date. So we dug into that. I asked Customs and Border Protection for clarification. They helpfully said that they declined to comment on this and to clarify it at all.
You're kidding me.
I spoke to NFI. No.
They
literally said, we're not going to comment further on this, even though it's causing, you know, major kind of chaos and upheaval in the sector. NFI said the same thing, that basically Customs is not clarifying anything to them. So I guess, you know, they're in the dark in what they're telling their members. But
NFI, yeah, who has all these people that are already in fighting and have these connections, you think that NFI would be able to get some clarity? And so you're saying that even they can't get answers?
It seemed that was certainly what the statement we got from them indicated. And yeah, I guess everyone's frustrated that there maybe isn't the communication from the government that there used to be to NFI, but that's kind of a different issue. But I think we spoke to multiple trade lawyers and also sources of ours who have then spoken to trade lawyers. And I think everyone is now sure that this is it has to be in the country at this point. And obviously this is to avoid the additional tariffs of over 10%. So this applies to, you know, in shrimp, big suppliers like India, Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand, who will, you know, as things currently stand, go to much higher tariff rates after July the 9th. Whereas Ecuador, it's not really an issue because obviously they have a 10% rate. And they will stay at that. And then I guess the question mark, which I'm sure Gary can speak about later, is how it'll affect pricing, because it obviously takes, you know, between anything from, I think, maybe 35 days to the West Coast from Asia, to 55 days to Houston, maybe 40 to 50 days to the East Coast. So, you know, the clock's ticking in terms of when shrimp exporters need to go and get the product shipped to make it to the US. This is obviously then going to likely cause, you know, huge volumes to be shipped. I'm sure when, you know, trade data starts coming out in the next few months, obviously there's always a lag. We'll see like significant imports into the US, and then, you know, that's going to have an impact on pricing. So yeah, it's been an interesting week. I do feel like start with a lot of uncertainty on this. I mean, I read the executive order and thought it was reasonably clear in terms of it was a rival, but
reasonably
confused. Yeah, reasonably. and then you think, well, you know, I'll ask the government, they'll clarify it, they won't. But I think we've got to a point now where, you know, enough kind of trade lawyers have indicated that July the 9th is their understanding too, that I feel, you know, maybe 99% sure that is the date.
Lauren, we probably say this every week. And there's a reason why we say this every week. This is why you need Undercurrent, is because we have people like Tom that are chasing these things and talking to these trade lords and hunting down this information. So thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
We've had Gary on the pod in the past few weeks to share insight on U.S. wholesale markets. But Dan, you report on farmgate shrimp prices. What impact has the rollback of these heavy tariffs imposed by the U.S. on major Asian shrimp producing countries had on prices this week?
Well, I mean, anyone familiar with the South Asian shrimp trade knows that farmgate prices from year to year are usually a roller coaster at the best of times. However, even by those standards, the last 2 weeks has been crazy to cover. We saw pretty much as soon as the tariffs were first announced on April the 2nd, prices within a couple of days dropped 30, 40 cents per kilo, which I guess if I translate into that pounds for you dealing with imperial measurements over, so I think about 18 cents per pound. India is particularly affected. They were given, I think, a 26% additional tariff, and this is on top of the 7.8% tariff they got last year with countervailing duties and subsidy rate duties. So for them, there was this initial moment where they had to simply stop exporting, more or less. There was just mass confusion. No one really knew what was going on. And what we've seen since then is the prices have picked up since the tariffs were rolled back in the last week. There's been an improvement, but they're still facing pretty much 10% lower prices than they would have expected a fortnight ago. And most of these Asian countries, the farms especially, they do not deal with very big margins. They're on very slim margins at the best of times. So it's a very, very tight situation. I think speaking to some, saying that they think maybe they can make up that 10% difference by reducing costs, by, you know, increasing farming density. But yeah, it's been a strange one to cover. There's still a lot of uncertainty. Processors aren't buying as much as I think they would have expected to otherwise. And I saw in the news earlier, well, a message from the Seafood Exporters Association of India is that they're looking to get 40,000 tons of shrimp sold to America within the next 90 days, because they want to obviously avoid the worst case scenario of having all of this shrimp already harvested in their inventory and unable to sell it before a 26% tariff gets reimposed potentially. Yeah, from the farming point of view, they are currently mid-season in Andhra Pradesh, which is India's largest shrimp farming state. So they already have seeded, they've been growing these shrimp already for many days, and they're at a point where all they can do really is cross their fingers and hope that it stays at 10%. Because at this point, I think they will lose more money by cancelling the harvest than they would by, you know, seeing it through and harvesting. They're probably going to aim for larger sizes, for the 30, 40 count size, because that is where they will see margins, so the best margins. But India has had issues with diseases, with shrimp mortality rates, and particularly with EHP, which doesn't kill the shrimp. It more just sort of stops them from growing. So you're going to be basically wasting money on feed for shrimp that doesn't increase in size. So
I didn't realize how many factors play into this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Every year is this great big question, almost a game, really, where the farmers have to try and figure out what's the supply going to be. If there's oversupply, you don't want to stock. If there's undersupply, you do. And they have two crops a year. The first one usually runs from about April to June, and that's the biggest. That sees the most volume coming in. And then the second one in the monsoon season is usually a response to how the market's adjusted to the first crop.
So it's a game before you add in all these tariffs.
Exactly, yes.
Wow.
And to be clear as well to listeners, that the trade that India does, especially to the US in shrimp, it's 300,000 metric tons a year. It's worth over $2 billion. It accounts for about 42% of their exports, according to the latest data from India's Ministry of Commerce. So you can't shift this shrimp somewhere else easily. Mm-hmm. There's no other market, I think, that can take even that kind of volume or even those product types. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it adjusts if there is a worst case scenario for them.
Yeah, I think, Lauren, usually we have one word that we pick as like our shot word of the week, and it has been tariffs and Trump. But I think this week it's uncertainty.
Well, that's been my baseline for a while now.
Well, Gary, let's get you involved in the conversation here. What have you been seeing regarding U.S. shrimp wholesale prices this week?
Yeah, well, you kind of stole my thunder in the beginning of the pod there, but it was the second consecutive week of massive price gains in the U.S. wholesale market. From the initial release of the reciprocal tariffs through the then pause and into this week, buyers became pretty active stepping into the market. They wanted to stay ahead of really more and more price increases, right? So we talked about that uncertainty and wanted to get prices in and the firmness that the market developed. But late yesterday and into today, there seems to be some sort of slowdown in buying, you know, partially by the buyers, but also partially by sellers allocating orders. You talked about, you know, what they're doing to protect their inventory, and allocation is one way that they can do it. Now, both sides are evaluating their inventory positions, and they're really going to watch the pull through from the customer, as well as what, you know, Dan and Tom talked about, the import pace over the next couple of months before making, you know, further business needs assessments. The industry really doesn't want to choke to demand, and continued price hikes can, you know, can have that effect. But there are also, you know, concerns of oversupply, you know, especially with the backdrop of COVID overhanging a lot of these importers. When we did import record shrimp into the United States for, you know, two or three consecutive years, and then there was a large drawdown in pricing because we had that oversupply situation. So it's a really a delicate balance pulling through imports in advance of the tariff, and what that does to supply here, and how demand plays out, and if demand's able to absorb, you know, that inventory that's going to try to get here before the tariffs, you know, get set in place. So 2 weeks of consecutive large price gains, kind of just in a holding pattern, you know, right now, but the market is firm because of that uncertainty that you talked about.
It's so interesting to see the two dynamics between what Dan was talking about closer to the source, and then what Gary brings in from, you know, the U.S. wholesale side. It's so much to keep on top of, but it's great that you guys have that insight for us and our subscribers too.
Yeah, Lauren, I just want to add to that, because it is, right? So, you know, Dan's talking about what's happening at the source, but then you have the growing competition for shipping. So those costs escalate, and now they have to not only add, you know, tariffs on, but, you know, freight costs that, you know, will probably start to firm, you know, given, you know, the limited containers and some of those things. But yeah, so a whole bunch of factors at play before it hits the importers here in the U.S. and then ultimately to the customers.
Right. It's that snowballing effect that we're seeing. It's super interesting. So while we're on the topic of talking about Trump's 90-day pause, on the other end, China was slapped with even more tariffs. And we know we are going to jinx it by saying the current rate out loud on a recorded podcast. But as of April 17th, 2025, China is facing 145% cumulative tariffs. And even further, some seafood from China, such as frozen tilapia and catfish and scallops, were previously subject to 25% tariffs from Trump's first administration. So that cumulative level for those species is up to 170%.
Well, into the triple digits, you could say. And let's hope nothing changes by the time I edit this podcast. I don't think I can handle it.
All right. Fingers crossed for all our sanities there. America's editor Jason Huffman reported this week that the faucet from which U.S. lobster pours into China will now slow to a drip because of the triple digit tariff.
We've got Jason on the line with us. Jason, you spoke to a handful of seafood executives about what's going on, and one prediction is that the Chinese tariffs are going to result in more live lobster being pushed into the U.S. and Canadian processing market. Tell us more about that.
So yeah, the U.S. is the world's second largest producer of North American lobster, most of which is cut off the coast of Maine and sold in the U.S. Most, but not all. Of course, the largest producer is Canada. The U.S. exported about 32,000 metric tons of lobster worth $629 million last year. That includes cold water lobster from New England, and also some warm water lobster tails from the Florida Keys and coast of California. But really, most of the exports are made up of cold water live lobster. Now, nearly half of that amount, about 15,500 metric tons, goes to Canada for processing. And much of that winds up back in the U.S. marketplace. However, the second largest market destination is China, which bought nearly 10,000 metric tons of U.S. lobster last year, spending about more than actually $200 million. That business is about to dry up, or as I said earlier, the faucet's about to turn into a drip. I can't keep the tariff number straight. I think it's 145% now, but
I told Lauren just to say triple digits because it is changing so often.
It's definitely triple digits. It's more than 140% if you combine them all. And those are in retaliation to Trump's tariffs, but that essentially will turn off the spigot. So you're left with, that's about, you know, 10,000 metric tons of lobster. Where will it go? Sources say other markets most definitely will try to take that lobster, but more often, most heavily, they believe it's going to go into processing. That means the live lobsters will be converted to tails and meat and probably sold in the US market. That's the belief, anyhow. We still need to see how this plays out.
All right, appreciate that outlook, Jason. And before we let everybody go, a quick reminder about why you need Undercurrent News in your toolkit. Whether you're tracking prices from source to wholesale, navigating global trade flows, or trying to stay ahead of regulatory and supply chain disruptions, Undercurrent News has you covered. We've got reporters stationed around the globe, embedded across the world's major production and trading hubs, keeping you ahead of every market move, policy shift, and trend shaping the seafood supply chain. And in addition to news, pricing, and data, we also offer bespoke reports that deliver in-depth data-driven intelligence, like the Seafood Titans 150, with detailed profiles of the world's largest seafood companies ranked by revenue, with comparisons to previous years, showing individual stories of growth, transformation, and in some cases, setbacks. It covers 150 companies across 32 countries, spanning the full value chain. And don't forget the Evolution, our land-based aquaculture report, which comes with weekly digital project updates, a monthly monitor newsletter, and a deep dive annual edition releasing this May, complete with forecasts, project pipelines, and strategic analysis. Undercurrent News is the seafood industry's most trusted intelligence source. If you want to see for yourself, we've got a link in the show notes for a no-commitment free trial.
Bye.